Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Scott Golden here with the Power of Perception Pro Wrestling Radio Network. Welcome to those of you who are new. Welcome back to those of you who are seasoned veterans of what we do around here. We give individuals in the independent wrestling scene an opportunity to talk to us about that experience. We've done over 70-plus shows thus far. They're all available in a free archive. You can also give us a follow in two ways on social media, LinkedIn, Scott Golden, Golden Opportunities Coaching, or you can go to Twitter and give at PO Perception a follow. 47,000 of you, almost 48. Can't be wrong, can they? In any event, that's a good way to find out what is going on live and also keep abreast of discounts for individuals looking for creativity coaching and all sorts of other good things. In any event, we've got Brendan Buck with us today, who is a independent wrestler in the Kansas area. First time we've ever connected with somebody from the state of Kansas, at least I think so. So we're going to talk to him about the creative process of being a wrestler in 2017 and his career, the start, and the various things that he has done in the sport, among other things. Let's merge that call now. Brandon, are you with us?
Yes, sir. How are you?
Doing very well. Thank you for taking time out, especially on a holiday weekend, for us today. Give our listeners just a little bit of your background so that they can understand what we're going to talk about over the next hour or so.
Wow. Well, there's a pretty big story about that. So starting the career late, if you will, I'm 33 and I live down here in Southeast Kansas, specifically Girard. And, you know, I've been in and out of this wrestling gig for about, I think we're going 8 years now. And it all started with when I was in college. And it was 2009 or something like that. And I was bartending at this bar in this college town. And one of my other bartenders and I were just having a conversation. It was dead. We just opened, so we were kind of waiting on the crowd. And she noticed my WWE keychain. And we talked a little bit about wrestling. And I didn't realize because I was that quote-unquote stereotypical WWE fan that there is other organizations and whatnot outside of the WWE. So she mentioned to me that she was a valet back in the day, and her friend, who ended up being my best man almost 2 years ago for my wedding, was still in the independent scene. So she texted him, and we eventually exchanged phone numbers. He tells me to meet him down in Joplin, Missouri. We traveled down to Oklahoma for a wrestling show that he's main eventing in, and I'm just in the back just talking shop with the boys and getting to know them. They're getting to know me. They put me in the main event as, like, a manager, and literally the rest is history.
All right, so we got to back up just a little bit. What got you
hooked
in the sport as a fan first? We all have that moment where we're like, hey, this stuff is cool. Let's check it out. What was that moment for you?
I can tell you exactly, because late last night I was trying to write down notes and trying to do research. It was literally October 21st of 1991, and I was living in Overland Park, Kansas at the time, trying to flip through cartoons, you know, just like any other kid would at that age. And I come across the USA Network, and there is Randy Savage tied up in the ropes being attacked by Jake Roberts with his King Cobra. And that was my first view of professional wrestling whatsoever. And of course then, and I hate using this term, but of course then I thought it was real. I hate using that term because I think anybody who is in this business knows it's very real. It's the same as a stunt man in a movie, except you feel the majority of everything, especially when taking bumps and whatnot. But I kept flipping on. I didn't know what I was watching at the time. I didn't know anything about TV Guide or what have you. So I kept flipping on. I just knew that that Saturday when it came back at such and such time that this was when the show was on. And I somehow found it. And, you know, I was just hooked. I didn't know why. I thought this was real life. I mean, we see like that spiel with the Ultimate Warrior and Papa Shango when he put that spell on Warrior, and Hulk Hogan, of course, and Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Junkyard Dog, and, you know, list goes on and on. I mean, these were the guys that I looked up to, and with my mom being a single mom, being adopted from a different country, you know, I didn't have, you know, the regular life, if you will, as some people do with both a mom and a dad, or just dad or whatever. So mom had to play both roles. So when she saw that I was intrigued by professional wrestling, she would research the times that it would be on television, and we would watch it together. And, you know, because of that, I guess my male role models growing up, obviously we have to start out with the obvious Hulk Hogan, then Randy Savage, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, and definitely is my number one guy go-to. And then we go past the 90s into the 2000s with the John Cenas, the Rocks, the Takers, the Triple H's, Daniel Bryan's, and then so forth. So that's kind of how it all started for me back in 91.
And it's really interesting because when I saw that my team had passed you forward, and I went, okay, I'm pretty much a wrestling history buff, at least late 70s through present. I'm not as knowledgeable about the 60s and before, but it's interesting. I'm like, Kansas, territory, Kansas. And I couldn't really come up with anything. So historically, what can you tell us about the state of Kansas? I know Missouri had central states back in the territorial days, but did that extend into Kansas, or Kansas one of those darker territories?
Kansas has always been famous for professional wrestling. Mind you, back in the territory days, you know, I was even thinking about this not too long ago, but listen, I want to say it had been Steve Austin's podcast or Chris Jericho's podcast, and they would talk about the days of them traveling to Kansas with Scott Hall and doing shows up there, and then, you know, especially Shawn Michaels going up to Kansas and traveling with Marty Jannetty and so forth and whatnot. I know in the Missouri area, Missouri and Kansas definitely became Harley Race's territory until he moved, I believe, over to Eldon, Missouri. Now, big things have been happening in the Kansas City area. It all started with a federation called Metro Pro Wrestling, which I believe lasted 7 or 8 years in Kansas City. Then a guy out of nowhere, just this last year in January, I believe you pronounce his name, Major Bazden. He sold his computer company, his technology company, for a good amount of change, and decided, you know, did he want to do arena football? Did he want to buy a baseball team? And then something convinced him that he was just going to start his own wrestling company. He bought out Metro Pro Wrestling, and it's literally a mini WWE in the Kansas City area. He's got trucks. He's got two venues. He's doing basically a SmackDown versus Raw thing, NWL National Wrestling League, Kansas City versus National Wrestling League, St. Louis. And as of this August, they're going to be expanding throughout the four states area. Within Wichita, they're still doing shows in the Kansas City area. I thought I saw something in Omaha, Nebraska, Iowa, all around Joplin, Oklahoma. It's crazy how it's expanded from when I was training up in there with Trevor Murdoch about 2 years ago to where it's at right now. It's just insane.
So you mentioned the training process. You step into a wrestling school for the first time. What are your thoughts? What do you pick up well? And what was hard to pick up in the schooling process?
I tell you, it was 2 Januaries ago, and Barry, the guy that got me into the wrestling business, he shared this link from Trevor Murdoch's official page that says you want to be a wrestler. We're doing tryouts in February, and then we start schooling in March and whatnot. So I said, you know what? If I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. And if I get it, awesome. If I don't, well, at least I took that chance and I tried. And I get up there. I don't think it could have been perfect timing either. I get up there, and I think there was a lot of pressure on me because knowing a lot of guys that I do in Oklahoma and in the Kansas area, Trevor knew who I was walking on in. He didn't even have to look at my face. He looks and he's like, Brandon Buck, what's going on, man? And I'm like, oh, here we go. You know, the tryout process, I can tell you, is just about the same as any other athletic tryout that you might have, except a little bit more gruesome. You know, we all stretch out. We stretch everything under God's green sun. You know, we work on lockups, and, you know, we hit the ropes. We take our bumps. And then I think the number one thing that killed all of us was blow-up drills. And it's exactly what we used to do back in amateur wrestling when I was in high school. Anybody who was an amateur wrestler. You know, you get into the one guy gets into the ref's position, which is knees and hands on the ground. The other guy just wraps his arm around your waist with his hand on your elbow, and you just hold on for dear life. And the other guy tries to escape. You just keep doing that for maybe a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever. That was probably the most gruesome of it all. He would talk to us at the end. Let us know if he would welcome us back or not. I obviously got accepted with six other guys, and that night, all banged up and everything, my wife and I went to the Sprint Center and we celebrated watching AC/DC in concert. So, but I mean, what I got from it was, you know, there's some guys that have absolutely no experience at all. But they got it. And then you have guys like me who haven't really hit a wrestling ring at all. I'm familiar with it. I've taken bumps. I know what it feels like, but I never had that one spotlight shot. And somehow I put a good impression on them. Schooling came up quick. I believe it was March 6th or March 8th. So it was whatever that Monday was in March. And what would happen, Southeast Kansas is about maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours away, depending on traffic, to Overland Park. And I would be up in Overland Park, Olathe area, 3 days a week, Monday through Wednesday. I would leave Monday afternoon. I would sleep over at my mom's house in Olathe, which is like a 15-minute drive away. And then I would drive back to Girard Wednesday night, and I probably wouldn't get home until like 1-2 o'clock in the morning, and then have to do whatever for the rest of the week until that next week came on by. I did that for 3 days a week for 3 months. That's how long his training process was. And I mean, when we first started, it started out like the tryouts. We would just be, you know, stretching our bodies, doing some laps, and working on lockups, suplexes, hitting the ropes, bumps, matches, tag team matches. And then fast forward, we would, you know, towards the end, we would eventually have our last match with either a senior veteran who's been around or with Trevor or whatever the case may be. And a lot of good happened to it. But unfortunately, I allowed a lot of bad to come into it as well. There's a lot of mental roadblocks and self-doubting that came on by. I mean, with anything, you know, this is one of the most athletic things I've ever done. So there'd be a lot of mental doubts and a lot of distractions, if you will. It just became tough, but I eventually made it through, and that's what I'm very proud of with that.
What's so interesting is I do a lot of mentorship work with indie wrestlers in terms of getting gimmicks together and, you know, navigating the business side of it as an entertainment and entrepreneurial coach. I'm very versed in that. And what you just talked about, I hear that so much. It's like, the most common thing I hear from the men and ladies in the indie circuit is, well, am I good enough? And the first thing I say to them is, if you don't believe you are, then you're automatically never going to be, so quit now. And they get real shocked.
Right.
And then it's like, wait a minute, are you saying I'm not? I'm saying no. I'm saying you're only as good as you believe you are. That's such a big thing. And certainly, you know, every time you learn a new hold, every time you take a new risk, there is that potential to get hurt, that potential to end up in a bad space. But there's also the potential for you to learn something new and grow. With that in mind, what's the worst injury you've had? What's the worst injury you've seen?
Oh, God. Well, I had a few. Non-wrestling-wise, for amateur wrestling in high school, I broke my neck, my C4 and C5, and was out for a bit, came back. But still, to this day, especially in cold weather, we're in summertime right now, and it's pretty humid. And for some reason, I chose to be outside talking to you guys. So with the holiday season, I apologize if you hear firecrackers in the background. But even to this day, if it's cold weather, I will still feel that slight bump in my neck. So Trevor was very imperative that I work on bridges, you know, where you're just lying on your head and you're arched with your feet up in the, you know, on the ground, just arching your back, your belly up to the sky and just stretching that neck on out. And I can't remember if it was a suplex or what it was, but I landed wrong. I landed a little bit high on my shoulders, and I hit the neck, taking a bump, and I was just out. I mean, I was able to walk, I was able to wiggle my fingers and toes and whatnot, but I was out. I was just, next day, I texted Trevor, or I messaged him, I'm just like, dude, I cannot make it. I can't move at all, and I think it had something to do with that bump that I took. He said, don't worry about it, kid, just ice up, you know, we'll see you next week and whatnot. The second bump that I took, for some reason, you know, and I think a lot of wrestlers, male or female, can understand this too. Sometimes when you're just doing bump drills and it's just bump, get up, just over and over and over again, obviously exhaustion, especially when you're in a warehouse with no AC whatsoever, and they do that purposely, it can be a little bit exhilarating. And I would not take a bump right, and it would just be the upper, like the middle of my back, close to where my ribs are. I just couldn't breathe. I couldn't lie on it. I couldn't do anything. It would just be so hard for me to just wrestle just because of how banged up I was. And then finally, when I started taking bumps the correct way again, that's what saved me. The worst I've seen was not even involving me, but it was in Harrison, Arkansas, I believe, for a legend show that they have with Jason Jones. And one of the guys, you know, who was perfectly fine throughout the entire day, right before a cage match, as graphic as it sounds, dropped dead and had a heart attack in the middle of the ring. We had to stop the show. They had to stop the show. They flew him out to, I believe it was Springfield, and we thought he was doing fine when we were on the road with Barry and another guy, Jeff Starchild, if you will. And then Jeff got the text message that he had died right then and there. It was so insane because he was, I don't think he was doing anything. I don't know if he was really poor of health or what. I don't want to assume or speculate, but he seemed perfectly fine throughout that entire day. And then as soon as he got into that ring, not really doing anything crazy with his entrance, he just collapsed. And that's when we saw the referee do the X. So we knew something was bad, and it ended up that it was.
I can remember when I was doing play-by-play in the late, let's see, this was probably 99, one of the two. We had a guy on the local independent scene where I was, literally did a match, walked through the curtain, dropped on the floor, heart attack. And he had passed a physical a month before. And sometimes it just, you never know. And so some of the risks there. Unfortunately, another part of the business that is fun or not fun, depending on your perception, is the travel. So got any stories from the road for the listening audience that can only happen in pro wrestling?
Well, I know a lot of my friends are going to be listening to this. If they're not listening to it now, they're going to be listening to it later today. But anybody who knows Barry knows it's literally like the best thing I can say about the guy. You know, you have the husband, you have the father, you have the businessman of Barry Lindus. And then when he's Mr. Saturday Night, Michael Barry, when he's Flex Zerbro with NWL, it's almost the same difference as Steve Stifler with American Pie. It only happens with him. It really only does. And with the crew that we hang out with. And, you know, I mean, we just talk shop a lot. And that's just really good. I like to pick his brain. But there'd be sometimes, some of these I don't even know if we could say on the air for listeners' sake, but but I mean, there would be times we would I believe we were in Oklahoma after a show, and we decided to go to Twin Peaks and whatnot. I mean, we had great food and we were just chilling out, watching some sports and whatnot. And I guess one of the guys had a really bad day. He was just mad at the world. He just wanted to drink, get drunk, whatever, whatever. I mean, I tell you, it was a very long drive for me because I lived in Wichita at the time, trying to bartend and bounce at a nightclub up there. So driving from Wichita, Kansas, all the way down to Oklahoma was about 4.5 hour drive, give or take. And I had to come back that night too. So it was a little bit off, but well, I went ahead and had a few drinks with the boys. And I mean, Barry, he's all up for it. Like, let's just drink. And so is some of the other guys. I'm like, man, I got to tone it down a little bit. I'll have one or two, but I got to tone it down a little bit. And, you know, he's just having a great time. It's like being in college again. And then we go ahead and tab out at about 11 o'clock or something like that. Well, I'm good on my water and good on my food and whatnot. I'm good to drive. I'm perfectly fine. And, you know, Barry, he always does. To this day, he still does this. He's like, text me when you get home. I don't care what time it is. Like, sounds good. Well, I start getting a little bit sleepy at about 12:30. So I'm thinking maybe I can head on up north to Pittsburgh, which is about a 2.5 hour drive, give or take traffic, spend the night at a buddy's house, and then just drive all the way back to Wichita just for being safe and whatnot. Well, this was before they had smartphones, and this was before I had a good GPS. I had to have a traveler's Garmin that they use for bike rides or hiking just so then I could get from point A to point B. Went by the first toll booth and whatnot, and I just had to pull over. I was sleepy. I just couldn't do it. So I figured, okay, cool. I'll just chill for about 30 minutes or whatnot. Not a big deal. It's 12:30 or something. And then I'll wake up and I'll just drive up to Pittsburgh and what have you. Well, I leave my car running. I leave the heater on. It's wintertime, what have you. I wake up to a semi passing me. And it woke me up because you know how the wind kind of bumps your car up a little bit. And I look at the time. It's 8 o'clock in the morning. And somehow my car is still running. And there's like an eyelash away from it just stalling in Oklahoma somewhere. I don't even know where I'm at. So I'm trying to look at gas stations, do everything that I can. I find a gas station. I have to go through the toll booth, pay the toll booth, go to that gas station about 5 miles, 10 miles up, and it's closed. So I have to find the nearest other gas station, and I can't go further on down because I don't know if I'm going to make it or not. It's like a 30-mile away gas station, so I'm trying to find the next one. I find one. We have to go back up the toll booth again. I had to go hit that same toll booth three or four times until I found a gas station. And I don't know how I still had gas. I don't. But I filled that sucker on up, and my friends at Woodstar were just, I had like 10 text messages and phone calls just wondering, Brandon, where are you? Are you okay? We haven't seen you. We haven't heard from you. What's going on? I'm like, as soon as I get to Wichita, I will tell you the story. It's a very long story. I don't have time. I'm in Oklahoma right now. I'll explain later. Is everything okay? I'll explain later. I just wanted to get home. But I finally get home, and my ex-girlfriend at the time was just looking at me like, what in the blue hell were you thinking? I'm like, I don't know, but I'm really happy that it all worked out in my favor. So, I mean, Barry, he hollered at me. I had to tell him the story. He's like, there's no way you could have made that up. I'm like, I swear to God, on the cross tattoo to my forearm, there's no way that I could have made this up. This is 100% real life. I'm sure it gets better with some of the other guys, but, I mean, that's just the one story I'll always remember, how I almost got stalled in Oklahoma because I just fell asleep in my car, leaving it running, and I was in absolute nowhere.
You will appreciate the story I shall share to commemorate or to come in alignment with your story. Years ago, when I was on the independent scene in the New England area, there was a great amount of fanfare for the Boston Red Sox finally making the World Series in 2004, as I'm
Absolutely. Probably
sure that most of the country remembers how big a deal that was. So, Anyway, independent promoter who was not very intelligent at the time, had not planned things out, had thought, gee, let's run an event on the same day as one of the World Series games. Well,
oh no,
that didn't go very well. Didn't go very well because on that particular October evening, there was, I can only call it, a hurricane-level monsoon in the Boston and surrounding area. Everybody was trying to get to the game because, for whatever reason, people hadn't figured out that the monsoon was not going to end before game time. Anyhow, we are stuck on Route 93 going into and out of Boston. So we stop at the little bridge going through, the tunnel and the toll and all that. We say to the person at the window, which way out of the Fenway traffic we need to go to such and such a town. She says, stay in the right lane. Well, unfortunately, she was wrong. We sat in about 5 hours of traffic because the person at the toll booth gave us the wrong direction to take. Literally, I remember, we got to the venue. First match is already in the ring. I'm doing play-by-play for the night. I had no time, nothing to do. It was literally, here's a microphone, go. The card was handed to me on a napkin, and we were good to go.
Oh, that's crazy. Experience such cards like that.
So, here's an interesting question. We all know that, unfortunately, the venues that independent wrestling has are not always the most wonderful 10,000-seat arenas. What's the weirdest place you've ever had the pleasure or displeasure of wrestling?
Oh, my God. You know, man, that's a good question. You know, the thing about it is, like, you know, before I did this thing on my own, when it finally clicked in, when I was traveling with Barry, you know, we would do, or I shouldn't say we, Barry would be wrestling at different venues that were just, how in the blue moon are these fans going to be able to breathe? Because there's absolute no AC in this gimmick. You have armories, God bless them. But some of the armories just had terrible electronics, and there was no AC at all, and everybody was just sweating bullets. It was just, it was unbearable. Up in Kansas City area, I remember one time with the corporation that I've worked for several times, GWF, not to get it confused with the old school Global Wrestling Federation, but this Global Wrestling Federation stationed out of Kansas City, Missouri. And we would do something up in the Independence, Missouri area at this armory, and their AC went out. And I had to be in slacks and a button-up long sleeve as the ring announcer. Everybody was sweating their heads off. It was unbearable. We tried using those jumbo fans to cool everybody off, but obviously when you have air against warm air, it doesn't really do it justice. I don't think they've just been bad, the ceiling falling apart or lights falling on our heads or anything like that, but they've been unbearable just because of either maybe the locker rooms or because of AC not working or what have you. I want to say probably some of the best places I've worked at. We have a decent middle school here in town that we were able to do a show 2 years ago. Wasn't the most popular because, there was an away football game going on and there's loads of other entertainment around town. So I don't know if it was bad publicity, bad marketing. It could have been a number of anything. But it wasn't as successful as we wanted it, with the hometown boy, being on play-by-play, who would eventually pull Michael Cole and go into a battle royal and debut his in-ring for the first time before he actually trained professional wrestling. But there have been some hits or misses. It's all been about if there's AC, if the seats are comfortable, and the fans are having a good time. But no, dump truck places or anything that's, falling apart. But I'm sure later on in life it'll probably happen to me.
You bring to mind a really awesome story that I think you'll appreciate. You mentioned the big box fan. And so there was an old venue that was an old, for lack of better terms, kind of like a fitness center / YMCA for kids type of venue. Well, it had glass windows all along the area, all four sides of the room that was used for wrestling. So you can imagine in the summer with no air conditioning, it would get to be about 100, 115 degrees in there. It was brutal. So we had a very charismatic heel at the time who thought it would be a brilliant idea to take the rather large box fan, industrial-sized bugger, and stand in front of it. He was about 400 pounds at the time, and turn it towards himself away from the audience and stand there and bask in the glory that was the fan. Well, this led to about, 50 or 60 young people from the ages of about 7 to 12 pelting him repeatedly with full water bottles out of anger. It was probably one of the more chaotic events I ever saw, all because he decided to stand in front of a fan in the middle of August.
Oh, I'm sure.
So, what's the greatest piece of advice that you've ever received in wrestling that applies to other areas of life as well that you may not have learned as quickly if you weren't involved in the sport?
I've had the chance to work with a great amount of people, from following Barry to doing my own thing to doing the shows by myself. Whatever the case may be. The first words of advice I ever got were, listen and shut your mouth. And that's all you got to do. Listen and shut your mouth. And that is 110% accurate. If you're just constantly talking, if you're constantly asking questions. I remember a time when I was training with Trevor, and this one kid, who will remain nameless, but he just wanted to talk. He was injured. The other guys weren't, so it was his job to just watch and take notes, because he's going to have to do this within the next 24 or 36 hours, whatever the case may be. But he just wanted to talk to us, and I'm just nodding my head. I'm not really paying attention to him. Just like, yeah, okay. All right, dude, I'm trying to pay attention. All right. And then Trevor would like yell, like, are you paying attention or do you want to talk and whatnot? He said that to the kid, not me, but I mean, that's 110% accurate. You have to pay attention. You have to listen. You have to let everything soak in and then ask questions later. If you ask questions right then and there, I mean, it's helpful, but also in the same sense, you know, what I believe in is at least bring like a small notepad with you, especially if you're just going to be watching in stands or if you're going to be watching in Gorilla or whatever the case may be, because then indefinitely you can at least have those notes down so you don't forget. Tuck your chin. Tuck your chin. I learned that very early, and it hasn't broken me down yet, but you have to. That's just an obvious right there. It was about 2 years ago when Trevor brought down Kurt Angle. We got a chance to have a grand opening over at the KC Pro Wrestling Training Center with him doing an autograph signing, and we got to talk to him a little bit, but there was a lot of distractions going on, so we didn't really get the chance to pick his brain or anything until afterwards when all the fans were gone, and he got like a 20-minute workout in at the gym just two warehouses down, and came back and was just talking shop with Trevor, talking shop about the old days and this and that. And, he always told us, even if you're just in a rush and whatnot, you can't get that hour in the gym or that 30 minutes in the gym. As long as you're doing something, to keep your body intact, you're doing something right. We didn't really go too much into nutrition or anything like that. Same with Colt Cabana, too, for a seminar after our training was over that July. We got to learn some things with him with heat drills and character development, and how he would give us literally any random topic, and we would have to cut a promo about that. And my promo subject at the time was pickles. Colt was just like, you know what, franchise? Give me a promo about pickles. And that's probably the worst thing he could have given me, because I just looked at him with deer in headlights look. I was so lost. But it's just being creative. It's just it's making sense to you, and just trying to tell a story. You know, there's so much stuff that I could go on and on about what I've learned and what advice was given to me and what have you. Some poor advice I got was, don't talk to that guy. You know, he doesn't know anything about that. And whether the guy did or didn't, I'm 33. I'm not trying to do this junior high school drama stuff. Yeah, I'm here to learn. I'm here to succeed. And, there's a high percentage that anybody in the wrestling business could have a failure of a career where they don't have a lot of matches because they didn't put forth the effort, or they don't win any titles, or they don't have a very – or not titles, but they don't have a lengthy career. I'm sure there's a handful of guys, even in the pros, that have never won a title, but still have had a glorious career in their stint, no matter where they started. The main thing I can say to anybody who's in this business, who's brand stinking new, is shut up and just listen. Bring a small notepad. You know, it doesn't have to be a giant notepad that you bring to school or anything like that. Just bring a small notepad and a pen. Write down notes, so then at the right place, right time, you can ask these questions while you're still around these guys, and they'll answer them for you. if they trust you enough, they think you're a good guy or think you're a good girl, they'll go ahead and answer them for you. But they can kind of see what they're getting themselves into by first impression, which luckily mine was successful enough. So there's a lot of good guys out there that'll give you that advice.
Let's suppose that we put you in a bit of a time machine now. You have the opportunity to wrestle two people, one still alive, one who's passed away, to bring up the best in you as a performer. Who do you share the ring with and why?
Shawn Michaels. And definitely. As soon as I was hooked on him after WrestleMania 12, it was done. His charisma, his appearance, how he tells a story, how I was watching In Your House 1996, Mind Games, just last night with him and Mankind. There was a corner of the ring botch where I guess Mick was supposed to follow him to the other side of the ring, and he didn't, and you see Sean very visibly pissed off and trying to talk to him, like, follow me. And that's they made their story build. They were even talking about that when I was listening to Edge and Christian's podcast, Anatomy of a Wrestling Match, Anatomy of a Match with Mick and Sean, and they talked exactly about that. And Edge and Christian were just like, man, you guys, I mean, there wasn't much built up or story to it, but as soon as you guys started going into a brawl match, that's when it all started right there, and that's what made the match. And I couldn't agree more. He's just, his presence is phenomenal. Nobody can touch him on that. I always know, I think anybody else knows too, you can't get better by being in a stalemate. You have to find somebody who's 10 times better than you and work up to where they are, because then you'll definitely see a difference. He's been my hero for long. He's Mr. WrestleMania. He's the man. He's definitely one guy that I would love to wrestle with.
All right. What about someone who's passed?
that would have to be Roddy Piper. Probably around the time, I want to say, man, I'm having a brain freeze right now. I want to say 95, 96 time when he took on Bret Hart at SummerSlam for the Intercontinental title. Those were the days that he was the hot rod. He was the first Stone Cold Steve Austin. He was a rattlesnake. He was a ticking time bomb. And I like to think that the heel version of Brandon the Franchise Buck is exactly that. You have a little bit of Roddy Piper. You have a little bit of Shawn Michaels. You put two and two together. Boom, you got Brandon the Franchise Buck. He was a smooth technical wrestler. He wasn't the best, but he was good enough that no matter who he was wrestling, he could tell a story with that person and make it look pretty gosh darn smooth. There's not a lot of guys that can sell a sleeper hold and make it into, like, this big-name finisher. Jake Roberts with the DDT. I mean, when you hit the DDT, you're done. When you hit the sleeper hold with Roddy Piper, unless they somehow did an active desperation and reversed it, you were done. There's not a lot of old-school guys that use those type of moves that you see guys using now for – you know, evolution reasons. You know, you gotta evolve. But Roddy Piper, indefinitely, just because I could see just that one moment. I want to say it was maybe WrestleMania 22, where WrestleMania goes to Hollywood. I guess that was the gimmick name. And you see Stone Cold and Roddy Piper in the ring for Piper's Pit, and they slap each other in the face. Piper cuts a promo, and everybody just goes on out. Just doing their thing, and I think that would have been fun.
All right. So you can transport yourself now back in the territory days. Territory's long gone, sadly. Back in the territory days, you put yourself in that time machine, you can go and put yourself in any territory. Where do you go and why?
NWA South, indefinitely. It is the one of the absolute most famous territories in the world. You had your Smoky Mountain, which was phenomenal. But NWA just there's no question. There's no question about it. Would I fit in per se? That's kind of a tough question, just because of who all was involved during those times. But I tell you, I just first and foremost, I mean, just thinking and just you know, from what I know of the golden days, I would have to choose NWA just because of its name and who's wrestled there and who made history there.
All right. And so if you could make one change to independent wrestling as a whole, has to benefit the maximum number of people possible, can't hurt anybody, what do you do and why?
Oh, man. Well, in Kansas, there's a lot of things. Nothing too bad. I just think it becomes political here and there. And it becomes comical with that. I think really if I could change something in the independent circuit, now it would just be somebody, you know, you've got to find a mentor. You have to. There's nobody in your life that's going to understand this other than what they see on television. But somebody who's actually doing this, you know, every other weekend or every day or whatever the case may be, they know everything that you're going to need to know. And they're still learning, because if they weren't, then they wouldn't be around. Find a mentor. Get, you know, ask questions. Find somebody who trusts you and you trust them, that will take you on the road, show you the ropes, so then eventually you can do this on your own. The political game, you know, really, I think sometimes guys make mistakes, whether it be on social media or whether it be in person, or maybe they didn't shake hands when they're, that's a big thing. I forgot to emphasize on that. If you're ever in a locker room full of the boys, I don't care if you are working that show. I don't care if you're just a friend or, you know, a boyfriend or a girlfriend of the worker and whatnot, you shake everybody's hand in that locker room. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, because I promise you, if you do not shake anybody's hand, they're going to look at you as snobby, that you don't deserve to be in the locker room. They'll probably kick you on out. I've seen it happen twice. it was deserving, because they're like, well, this is my boyfriend, I don't need to shake anybody's hand, whatnot. No, the boyfriend should have explained to you, or the girlfriend should have explained to you how important this business is, and this is a business. This isn't just a hobby. You shake everybody's hand, because this is time that they could be spending time with their families or their friends, but they're choosing to follow their dreams, and this is why they driven 2 hours, 5 hours, 10 hours, whatever the case may be, just to perform a show for $20. Or $50, or whatever the case may be. Understand the business. I think seminars are great, and there needs to be a lot more of them. It's educational. You get to meet, if you want to go there, you get to meet famous people or people that have been around long enough that they've done it all. Maybe if they got signed by WWE or not. That doesn't have to be the ultimate goal. I'm sure it is for everybody, but that's not, I mean, nowadays, 2017, you have different options. Might not be the best, but at least something to get your foot into a wrestling ring. But back to the political game, I think really if we had a lot more leaders, people would just be like, you know what, grill up this meat and eat it, because I don't want this apart or associated with my federation or with my company. And if you want to continue on with this game, then you can find somebody else to work for. I think that would help out a lot and show that there are no punches when it comes to the political game. It'll happen no matter what, but I think if there are more leaders to kind of squash it, I think that would help out, especially with the younger guys who don't know maybe exactly what they're getting themselves into.
All right. We've got about 10 minutes remaining, so I want to give you an opportunity to Plug any social media that you have. Where can people find matches of you online? And also, what do you have for upcoming events over the next couple weeks and months?
Absolutely. Well, I'm on all kinds of social media, and I'm sure my friends are listening right now, and they're laughing, and they're nodding their heads. Yep, Brandon's on social media. You can find me on Facebook. It's going to be under Brandon Buck, or you can just type in the franchise, Brandon the Franchise. I'm sure you'll see me. It's a picture of my wife and I in my wrestling gear. I also have a fan page, Brandon the Franchise Buck, the franchise in quotes. I believe it's 100% viewable to the public, so anybody can join that. If not, just find my personal page, and then you can find my fan page as well. I'll try and fix that. I just now thought about that. I am on Twitter at Real Franchise. You'll see me on the ring apron as a profile picture. I'm on Instagram, the franchise 35. I post just I'm almost like John Cena when it comes to that thing. I just post the most random stuff, so don't be confused by some of my posts. Some upcoming matches that we have going on, July 22nd in Topeka, Kansas, with IWC. There is going to be a show. I believe the time is 7 o'clock that night. So I will be a part of that. I have yet to know exactly what I'm doing up there. All I know is I need to bring my wrestling gear. So I'm obviously going to be wrestling. I just don't know who my partner is and who I'm facing, but I hope to post updates soon. There are two matches that you can find. One is for anybody who has Roku, R-O-K-U. You can look up under the Independent Wrestling Channel, Global Wrestling Federation. Not the old school version, but the new school version. There are two shows that they have up there. One of me ring announcing, which I don't know if you can either hear me or see me. But then there's another one that we had in Pittsburgh, Kansas, of me doing play-by-play and then getting into the ring for a battle royal. And then there is another match from Kansas City over at Soccer Nation that we just had with GWF on March 25. That is on YouTube. I'm going to try and fix the security settings on that because a friend of mine uploaded it. I didn't. So then it's going to be on my page, which I believe my page on YouTube is the Franchise 35, which I can actually look up for you right now. And it is. It is, yep, the Franchise 35. So I am on that. I'm on everything. Those are some matches that I've done in the past. And that's what I have coming up here in the next couple of weeks.
All right. Any major oversights that we didn't touch on in the last hour or so that you think would be egregious if we didn't touch on them now?
I thought about this, and I can make a very long story short very quick. Sincerity and being a man or a woman is humongous in this business, and sometimes people portray you off of your social media alone and not the type of person that you are face-to-face. One particular incident was right after my training, and I basically pissed some guys off with my social media rant. I was just angry at the world. I was questioning myself. I was in a bad state. And some of the Kansas City guys that I trained with, word of mouth, and went to my trainers. And I went to Trevor and Derek McQuinn. They weren't too happy with me. And they said their piece and whatnot. I had a lot of people try to threaten to put me on the blacklist. Don't book this guy and don't do this and whatnot. So I was really, really angry. There's plenty of times that I deactivated my accounts and just took a break from social media life and tried to figure out where I wanted to be in life. And a few months later, I'm sure everybody for the most part heard about beautiful Bobby Eaton, who is in Atlanta, I believe, missed his flight coming home. and everybody thought he was missing. Well, he was actually just, you know, thankfully he was just at the airport because his phone died and he didn't have a backup battery or a charger or anything. And two local guys found him and posted a picture on social media and made sure everybody was good, and they knew that Bobby was good. And I remember exchanging messages with Tommy Dreamer, you know, letting him know what I knew, and him letting me know what he knew and whatnot. We're trying to get in touch. And I don't know what happened that night, but I think it was just a rage of emotion. I got on a huge message with Derek and Trevor. I'm just like, I know I'm probably the last guy that you want to talk to, but I want you to know I'm sorry. I was in the wrong, this and that. And we all made up. Everybody was good. And to this day, we're good. So really, I guess the point of my story is, you know, don't let whatever you post on social media, which we all know is dangerous enough, whatever you post on there, make sure that the people that this is directed to or even not directed to know the kind of person that you are. Or don't even post it at all, so then you can save yourself. Because in the long run, really, if it wasn't me and if I didn't do it the way that I did, I'm almost 100% certain that my career would have been over before it even began. Just watch yourself. Ask for advice. Find a mentor. Train. Find different ways that you can do it. If it doesn't happen, it's not the end of the world. It'll eventually come. I'm 33 right now, and I believe Don Dallas Page started when he was 35. So, I mean, it's not the end of the world. It's probably going to happen if you just keep pushing it.
All right. And so on that note, we will close for today. I want to thank you for your time. And for anybody that is still here or anybody that is listening live, there are over 75 shows for you to check out in the archive. Everybody from Anthony Henry of Evolve and FIP fame to Bruce Pritchard, you may know him as Brother Love, to various other independent stars have all been here for your benefit. We try to be here as often as we can. We are grateful to the continuation of the growth of what we're trying to do, which is give the underdiscovered who can't get on national or international media, we give them an outlet here, and that is our main goal. In any event, I encourage you to go choose the shows you like from both of our channels. Ignore the ones you don't, but above everything and all, keep your feet on the ground, your mind in the moment. Until next time, everybody.